Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Easy Agile podcast. Each episode, we talk with some of the most interesting people in tech, in agile, and in leading businesses from around the world. We talk all things from building authentic workplace cultures, implementing agile, agile methodology, our new world of work, and more. We have some amazing guests lined up for you this season, and we're really excited to be sharing these conversations with you all. So if you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review in your favorite podcasting app. Now let's jump into the latest episode.
Hi all, and welcome to the Easy Agile podcast. My name is Dave Elkin, and I'm co-founder and co-CEO here at Easy Agile. Before we begin, Easy Agile would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land from which we broadcast today, the people of the Darawal speaking Lake country. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and extend that same respect to all Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander, and First Nations people joining us today. Today, I am joined by Jean-Philippe Camus, or JP. JP is the principal customer success advocate at Adaptivist and is passionate about teamwork, meeting new people, presentations of all kinds, loves a microphone and a captive audience. This podcast definitely fits that mold. New technologies and, most of all, problem solving. JP, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Hey, no worries. It's great to have you on. We want to take some time today just to talk through Atlassian Team 23. The ecosystem is gearing up for one of the biggest events of the calendar and the ultimate event for modern teamwork. You've been to a few Atlassian Team events before, and last year being the first one back in a while, Quebec to Las Vegas is quite a gear change. What are your tips for people attending Team for the first time?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, Teams to me is a massive event. It's like a beautiful moment to actually take in everything that has happened in last year for Atlassian. And what I mean by that is actually more and more like what's happening with Atlassian is actually what's happening in the world of work. So I think it's like just a great time to kind of reassess where you're at. So for me, it's about planning out the main things you want to hit and don't overcrowd your schedule. Like that's a mistake I made the first time was just I wanted to see the most of everything. And I was like, yeah, I can absolutely do back to back to back. It's going to be fine. I'll be walking from one thing to another. Truth is, after a talk, you'll have some questions. Some things will pop up. Oh, that's interesting. I could maybe explore that. You're going to want to do maybe some, you know, floor hunting, which is like, hey, looking through the partners. And maybe you've heard about something like an app that you really want to go look at or something like that. So that's always going to happen. And then you're going to miss that next talk. So make sure that what you highlight is really things you want to see and plan according to that. That to me is like the number one thing. Don't try to do it all. Do what you feel is really, really important. Then the rest, try to make it work because it's going to be a lot of walking, a lot of listening, a lot of talking. And the last thing, the second thing, which I remind everybody is to hydrate, get a bottle of water. There's going to be plenty over there, but everybody's going to have their own branded bottle of water. So don't worry about having one or not, but get one and just hydrate. I mean, we all get very busy during the day and we all know how the nights can go. So keep drinking some water. And those are my two tips.
That's great advice. I think, yeah, hydration is certainly something to consider. I remember particularly a wall of donuts at one point distracting me from good habits like that. So yeah, it's really important to make sure you've got the basics in line. What are you most looking forward to from the lineup at Team 23?
Yeah, I mean, every year the keynotes are what's going to hit the most. Obviously, you know, getting the chance to hear James Cameron talk is going to be very, very interesting. I think especially in the year of Avatar 2 is just great timing, obviously probably planned. Let's not like it's, you know, he's probably on a tour, but it's going to be really great to hear some stories of how that movie came about. It's been a long time in the making, probably the closest thing we got to really long development on a film. Like it feels like a long software development cycle thing. Like it's just, you know, that's a very long time. And then, you know, hearing Van talk about some of the things that he's seeing in today's world. Van Joseph, I believe, is the name of the second talker. And remember seeing him a lot on the CNN broadcasts and stuff during the elections and kind of the impact that he brought to the whole broadcast was quite something. It'd be very interesting to hear them talk. And then as far as kind of maybe not the big ticket items, really interested to, I think this is the year where the practices or the different tracks that Atlassian usually promotes, I think this is the year where they really start to hit. What I mean by that is I think before this year, So when you look at last year's team, and then before that, you know, tracks were kind of like wishy-washy. Now they actually have the products to back them. I think JSM is in a very, very good spot. I think their agile, you know, tooling is in a very good spot. I think their DevOps, which is what I expect is going to be pushed the most, their DevOps tooling with the Jira product discovery and all their point A stuff is going to be where it's at. So I think you're going to get really good talks on those practices. I think that's going to be the year where the tracks actually make a ton of sense and are very valuable to people.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing. And it's really interesting. Yourself, you're a Canadian, and James Cameron is a Canadian, and he's talking about creating the impossible. And I think that's a theme that's coming through in what Atlassian's promoting and bringing that through. It's really interesting to see you hear or hear you talk about the both building movies and media and CNN, the reference there, and how that can apply with a strongly software development based audience. It's really interesting to see that like building a movie is a very much a waterfall process, in that you have this huge deliverable at the end. But I know that there are, like Pixar, for example, use the this concept of demo trusts, we call them, or the Pixar demo trusts. Yeah. So essentially you can test along the way as you go before you deliver this huge thing. It's really intriguing to think what we're going to hear from James in regards to how he builds these amazing projects.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. So I'm actually a huge Marvel fan. I don't have my book with me. The Creativity Inc. is a book that I love by Ed Catmull on how they built Pixar as a business and as a delivery team, not just about the movie side of it, the creative side of it, but how do you bring creativity into a more structured world that is the corporate world kind of thing, which they're now a part of. So very interesting that you bring that up, because I'm very fascinated by their process as well. I think they were kind of the pioneers in the movie making business or industry into bringing kind of the agile methodologies or thinking to movie making. Now, what would happen historically in movies? So you don't know this, but my background's actually in acting. So when I was a young lad, you know, young adult, let's put it that way. Yeah, I wanted to be an actor, and then things changed. Obviously, I'm not a prolific actor. But so I'm very, very passionate about the movie making industry. And, you know, movies historically has always been about you shoot to develop. And then at the end, you cut it. So you make mistakes. So like we said, right, very, very waterfall-y. I think now that technology is almost like 50 to 60% of a movie now, more days. Like if you look at Marvel movies and all that, you could argue it's 50 to 60% is going to be computer generated, which can be a bad or good thing. Now that I'm not going to get into that debate. But the nature of previs and all the animation work that goes behind it makes the process more agile, meaning that what they're going to do is they're going to build for a week, and then they're going to review the film that's been made, and then they're going to correct and do it again, right? So already you got your feedback loop going, you got your process, you got your sprints going. Like I can map all that out to some agile processes, and I wouldn't be surprised that, you know, you're looking at some that are looking to scale up, like where you could even argue, like, what are you guys going to do for your scaling methodologies? Like, there's a lot of things that are very interesting. And I think going back to our first point, sorry, I really went on a tangent here, but going back to Avatar, when you have such a long cycle and you have a movie that's built, that one is heavily computer generated. I mean, every actor has stuff on their face and they're acting in a blank studio. Now you're talking about agile processes, because if you're building hours and hours and hours of work and you're just building and building and building and never review, I can't, maybe James will say that's how they did it. And I'll be like, well, you guys were, it's very difficult. You made your life very, very difficult. But it'd be very interesting to hear, because I cannot imagine them not going into some type of an agile way of building this movie.
Oh, of course. I think that if you imagine the cutting room floor it's an old adage. And literally they used to cut the film and they'd leave it on the floor, as that's something we're not doing anymore. And so I dare say that there's a vast amount of film which is thrown away and redone. And I feel that if we could see past that to this beautiful thing that they're doing behind the scenes, which is testing and iterating on their shots, it's actually quite a simple concept to apply these agile processes to filmmaking. It's just at the end you have got this big bang. Same with game production. When you produce a game, you can't, like people do early access, which is fantastic, you can't early access a movie.
No, exactly.
Yeah. But that's what, going back to Pixar, that reference, I actually made the mistake. It's not actually the Demo Trust. It's the playbook by Atlassian. It's a play called Demo Trust, but it's the Brains Trust. And it's bringing together the team to talk through, does this fulfill the vision of Pixar? Does this make Pixar Pixar? And helping the team understand, so directors get that ingrained Pixar-ness through that process. And so, yeah, there's a whole team behind the scenes here. There's not one person who's just driving this at the director level. There's actually a whole team of people collaborating on this movie. So I'm really intrigued to hear that from James, to hear how the teamwork comes out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at a movie like Avatar, again, another thing that we don't think about is the connecting remote teams, which is a big part of what we do in 2023, is connecting remote teams so that they feel they're working on one project. When you have a movie like Avatar, you know, your VFX is going to be somewhere, your actors are going to be another place, and then you're going to have music and sound's going to be somewhere else, and your editors are probably going to be somewhere else. And so there's a lot of remote work that you do. How do you bring all that together? I remember watching like the old documentaries around, you know, the Lord of the Rings movies, and they were like literally flying people in and out with the actual roll of films because they were so afraid that people would steal them, and so that they wouldn't put it on the internet. They would actually carry them around, and like, so they had to fly from London to New Zealand to, like, it's kind of nuts when you think about it in 2023. Like, really, you had to take like a 10-hour flight just to get your film across. It's probably easier also with the data, like just the bandwidth and everything. So I think that's also going to be an interesting part, is how do you connect teams. And you brought up a great point around the Pixar way, or that's how they call it, right? The Pixar way. When you think about that, there's some really, really cool ideas behind bringing a team together and rallying them around one project. I think as teams get more remote and distanced from products and things that they're working on, and, you know, I do it myself at work, like things become generic at some point. You're just doing the same thing over and over again. You lose touch a little bit with the work that you do. And I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to rally a team around a project and say, like, do you believe in this project? I believe in this project. Do you believe in this project? And making sure the team does. And if they don't, why don't you? What's preventing you from that? And you know, I think there's a lot of good conversations that can come from that. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah, you talk about going more remote. Is that a trend you're seeing, that we're continuing to see more and more teams go remote? Or are we seeing a reversal of that to some extent?
It depends on what sphere you're working with or in. In my position, I get to touch kind of everything. I tend to gravitate towards the more creative teams of like gaming and software development and stuff. I do work with banks. I do work with, well, yeah, you know, corporate America, kind of the classic suit and tie kind of places, everything. I see everything. And there is absolutely out right now a battle of old versus new, you know, old ways of working, new ways of working. There's a huge clash happening. And I to this day do not know who's going to win, because even the big Silicon Valleys, I mean, we're all seeing what happens with what's happening with Apple and kind of them putting mandatory like office dates and stuff like that. And you see that from an executive that, yeah, is leading maybe one of the more bleeding edge, you know, companies in the world, but he's still kind of an old school vibe of, you know, creativity. And I hate bringing it back to Pixar. I'm going to bring it back to Pixar. They have such a great office. So like I said, I'm very fascinated about what they do. And they call it unplanned creativity. And they truly believe that unplanned creativity happens in the office. And when you have unplanned meetings, unplanned interactions. So they one of the things that they did, it's now very common, but when I was like 14 years old and I was reading about them, I was like, oh my God, these are such cool things to do. They were kind of doing those, like, you know, ping pong places and activities and games to get people to play together and start talking about what they were doing. And then all of a sudden you got an engineer talking to a VFX artist that's talking to a 3D or conceptual artist. That's like, they would never meet in a meeting or anything like that. But because they're playing ping pong and throwing ideas around, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, maybe we could build this thing. That'd be amazing. Cause the artist's saying, well, now I could do clouds this way. Yeah, nuts. I could create clouds that look like this. Then the engineer goes, well, you can just tweak a little bit of things. And anyway, so I think there's this old school mentality that these, and it's a question I've asked myself in our Slacks and where we kind of talk about work. Like, I don't know what the future is for unplanned creativity. I don't know how you recreate that in a virtual world. I think it's a big problem that some software companies have tackled with some tools. I don't know how you force someone to sit behind a computer and do something that's like unplanned. Like, how do I stumble across something? I don't know. But yeah, I think there's a bit of that in the old school mentality. Like, I need people in an office so that they can meet and they can interact together. And I still struggle to find where they're wrong. Let's put it that way. I don't know where they're wrong about that theory of when you're with someone, when you're with people, things happen in a different way.
I can't agree more. And I think that if I have any perspective on this, it's that there is not often, it's not a black and white or a zero sum kind of game. It's there's a combination of things that will occur and that will move forward for better or for worse. You can look back in history to Bell Labs and the creation of the semiconductor and the way that the building was designed essentially to allow people to walk past and have cross-collaboration and cross-functional conversations. Have you ever considered that the unplanned creativity that Pixar was talking about was actually planned unplanned creativity? So they made these spaces on purpose. How can we make things on purpose to have things unknown to us happen?
Yeah, actually, you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah, they built the Pixar offices this way because of that. That's what I guess that is to me. That is the secret. Like if someone finds it, it's like the caramel milk or whatever, just bottle it up and sell it to people, I guess. I don't know. I have no idea what the answer is. I've looked and it's, you know, there's an app out there. I can't remember the name of the app, but it's like you're like a 2D sprite and it looks like an NES game and you're like moving around from like place to place. You can like decorate your office and it's kind of like it's got this vibe of, you know, Animal Crossing, which is a game by Nintendo where you can just create stuff and people can visit your island and all that. You can kind of do that with your office space and then you can create like a common area where people walk. And I'm like, when you look at it in the video, it was brilliant. Great. I can actually be in the office without being in the office. And it has this whole technology of proximity. So like if you're having a conversation with someone in an open area, people could like walk by and hear what you're saying and join in. A lot. Beautiful technology. Doesn't work with the humans when you really think about it. Why would I go online to walk around an office to go talk? I'll ping you on Slack. It'll be easier. All right. I don't need to walk to your office. So it's like, I don't know what the secret is. And yeah, you're right. It is planned in a way. And I think we do that. And I don't know for you guys at Easy Agile how you do it. In Adaptivist, you know, we do like to travel with teams. So whenever we do things, we try to, even if it's like customer work or if we're going for an event or something, we try to make it a point to make it about also us and what we do. So we rarely travel alone. If I'm going to a customer, we're trying to get, you know, two consultants in there. Or what I'm trying to say is like, bring more people. And it's a point I think Adaptivist is trying to make. I think that's what Simon, our CEO, is trying to make is, you know, use these opportunities to be with people. I think it's a beautiful thing, but it's one of a myriad of solutions. I don't know. I really don't know. What do you think? What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I can share how we work at Easy Agile. So here I am today in the office. This is a great place for me to do this recording. We have a room for about 50 people here in the office in Wollongong, south of Sydney. We have about 10 to 15 who usually arrive on a daily basis. And that's great. We don't mind. We love people working from home and working in a way which is more convenient and relaxing for them. At the same time, we do have quarterly planning sessions that we go to. We have advanced Easy Agile every quarter. We come together in person and we've strategically ensured that we hire in a way so that's possible. So people aren't flying across vast swathes of ocean to get to this conversation. And in a way, it's planned, unplanned. So we do our planning ahead of time. And when we come for advanced Easy Agile, we'll have something that we want to either upskill the team with or whatever. And then we'll have some team bonding where people can choose from a range of different activities they want to do together. And so, yeah, for us, it's more about getting together in person because we know that's really valuable to both build an understanding of each other as a team and to build that rapport. It can't be done over Zoom to an extent. So we absolutely, our business runs entirely in a remote friendly way. And we don't rely on people to be in person and sync in person to move forward. However, we do see there's a great value there. So we try to live in both worlds and we get the benefit from both of them. It's, yeah. And so that's one thing that can work. It's not for everybody. If you have a truly distributed global business, it's not exactly easy or affordable to bring everybody together on a quarterly basis.
Yeah. I think it's beautiful though. And we used to, so I've been Adaptivist for close to six, I'm on my sixth year now. And we used to be able to we didn't do quarterly, but we did kind of a yearly thing at the end of the year where everybody would get together. We called it WinterCon for the last 2 years, which I actually loved the idea, which was very much, we could pitch ideas of what we wanted to talk about. Could be about work, could be about customers, could be about last year, whatever you wanted to talk about. Could be about yourself, could be about a cool thing you did this year, whatever. and we had kind of a voting system, but really pretty much anyone that said any, you could get in. And you could just walk around, and it was literally a conference center. Like, you know, we'd set up some rooms, and you could walk in and look at a presentation, like literally like Teams or whatever. And it was the best experience every time that we did that. And I love these because, yeah, you get, you know, there's value, there's ROI in having everybody kind of like learning and upskilling and breaking down these silos of like, hey, I never worked with marketing, but here's an hour talk around something we did in marketing that I really want to join in, all these things. That's great. There was also the unplanned ROI where you were like coming out of there with like multiple ideas of like, oh, I could explore this, we could explore that. I got this meeting set in Jan now that whenever I come back in January, we're going to be talking about this thing that, you know, we talked about for cloud migrations or these, you know, all that was happening at WinterCon. Now we grew exponentially post-COVID. So, well, during and post. So while COVID was happening and all of a sudden everybody wanted work. And then, you know, as companies that were remote, I think a lot of the companies that were remote kind of grew during COVID versus companies that were local or anything like they kind of, yeah, they slowly diluted down a little bit. Let's put it that way. And as we grew, we can't support that anymore. Like as a one-time thing where you'd have, you know, we're close to 1,000 now. It's a lot of people to move and a lot of conferences, like a lot of conference rooms and presentations and stuff that we can't, you know, we just can't accommodate. So I miss it a lot. And we've been doing it remotely. But like you said, it's not the same to go on a Zoom call. Like I remember, you know, sitting down in these presentations and you're sitting down next to people that, you know, someone from Arkansas, someone from, you know, Cambridge, and you start talking. Yeah, you're listening to conference, but we all know what happens when you're listening to a presentation. You start talking like, oh, that's an interesting idea. What'd you do last weekend? Like we, you know, you start talking. That those are things you can't do on Zoom. Like you can't really reproduce that on Zoom. It's not going to happen really. And I miss that dearly. And I don't know what the solution is when you have these kind of global distribution. I mean, I guess you do it in a smaller way, maybe all of North America meet up or things like that, but it's just not the same. Not the same at all. I think it's beautiful that you guys can still do these because everybody's kind of close by. I think it's really nice.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's something we're hoping to hold on to as long as we can. We understand that, yeah, these things nice. Don't scale. And at one point, we'll have to break it into different events so that people can have a better, I think, a higher level of involvement in that. If you have too many people at the same time, it can be just a bit read-only. I might, the way yeah. I use it, you know, it's
that's nice. As a yeah, participant. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So I'd love to just quickly touch back on Atlassian Team 23. Yeah, and you did mention at the beginning, that's all right, we'll get there. there's these new apps, especially in the DevOps tooling space that Atlassian's working on, so Discovery. And can you just talk a little bit more about what you see there and why that's coming to fruition now?
Yeah, I think it's all about cloud. I'll be the first to say that, you know, big fan of data center, big fan of on-prem. That's how I learned the Atlassian tool set. So a little skeptical when cloud came about, and you know, as it grew and it got better, that was great. I think it's now at a mature spot where the 0.8 program, which is where all of these tools are coming out of, so the product discovery, Atlas, and all that, those are the fruits of cloud. That's because now that we have cloud, they can churn out products and try things and see if they stick or not. And I think that's why I think this year is the year where I think the program is mature enough. Migration's ready. I mean, we're 1 year out of server end of life. Like, I think we're finally in a place where we can actually talk about all these opportunities. And most of the people at the conference will be able to get value from it. I remember last year where talks were heavily around JSM and all the cool things it would do, but you still had a lot of people on server, still had a lot of people on data center. So it fell a little bit on deaf ears. Like, you know, a lot of people in the crowd were just like, yeah, it's not for me. And both keynotes were about that. So anyways, I think this year it's going to be better because of that, because everybody's kind of bought in. And I think it's right now because, yeah, it's cloud. You can ship easier, like it faster. You can ship better. You can iterate better. You can get a product ready much, much quicker than if you're on-prem. And I think that's why you're seeing this blow up. I also think they're great ideas. Big fan of Atlas. Specifically, big, big fan of Atlas.
Yeah, fantastic. So how are your customers seeing the migration to cloud and on the larger end? Is that something that they're open to?
Everybody's intrigued. I'll start there. Everybody's intrigued. Now, the level of interest depends on the industry and the size. when you have a massive, I'll use banks because to me banks are kind of like countries. So if you look at a massive bank where you have like 30,000-40,000 users, usually they have solid infrastructures, they have solid administrators, they have teams that are kind of living off this it's built like its own economy, basically. It runs itself. And when you go in there and you try to teach them about cloud and all the great things it'll do, they start asking questions that are very technical and they're very good. And there's not really an answer in cloud for yet. And so it gets skittish. Whereas if I go to like a 500,000 people organization and they start asking questions about cloud, and usually we have more answers for that. It's just an easier conversation. They don't have the same worries or the same thing, troubles on their mind than the admin of 40,000 people. It's just not the same reality that they're seeing. So I think for now, and I know Atlassian's making a big push into that enterprise space, I think for now, you're going to see that growth. But as long as we don't have full autonomy of where our data is and how accessible that data is, it's going to be a problem. As long as FedRAMP isn't available to all, as long as all these different SOCs and compliances aren't available to all, like these are very difficult because you've built an ecosystem around a lot of integrations, and Easy Agile being, to me, one of those integrations, because it's a third party app, however you want to look at it. Adaptivist has their own third party apps. You have ScriptRunner and all that. We all have third party apps. So Atlassian can't be like, oh yeah, I'll make a blanket statement, we can do all these things. It's not really true. I'm like, hold up. Like, you got to take into account like all these different app partners out there that are doing their things, and you can't put us all into one roof. Like, I think they're victims of their success. Like, what made still making Atlassian great is the partner ecosystem, apps, solutions, you know, sort of everything. Mm-hmm. But it's also what's causing the adoption and the speed to which adoption of cloud is happening. It's making it slower than they would want to. And I think that was maybe the misstep a little bit when everything got kind of announced. It was like, oh, you guys do rely on these apps a lot. Like, yeah, a lot of our customers like actually would say that the apps are even more important to them than the core. Like, it's just a thing that you're seeing. So to go back to your question, depends on the complexity of the instance, and the bigger the instance, usually the more complex it is. So if I go to over 10,000 users, it's going to be a very long conversation. Very, very long conversation.
Yes, it is. And it's funny that Atlassian did ship this and say, hey, well, actually, there was a presumption that the apps were covered by SOC 2 or the like as well. And that was a missing bit of not information. It was just a misunderstanding. But I say, like, as a business owner going through SOC 2, it's a very rewarding and good process to go through. It's hard, and we're doing it far earlier than Atlassian did in their own journey. But the sooner you do it, the easier it is. Ideally, that as a smaller company, you have less things to worry about, and the processes you put in place will be easier to maintain and monitor. So we're excited to really go down the SOC 2 path and to provide that peace of mind to our enterprise customers. So yeah, very good process to go through.
Yeah, you guys are going through it right now. It's not, have you acquired it yet? Did you get your compliance yet? Or you're
no, we're getting on the way to SOC 2 Type 1 at the moment.
Wow, and then, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got security group now in, and they're handling all that. I'm not good with the compliances. I'll say it right now, right off the bat. I don't know them very well. I know they're like letters I would like to see next to every app. That's what I know. I don't know how in depth the process is, but I know it's very involved, like to the point where you need to have a team kind of dedicated to making that happen. So what have you guys seen like so far? Like it's coming along great. What are some of the challenges that you've seen? Maybe I'm just intrigued.
Yeah, look, so our cloud apps are all architected in the same way. So they all use the same code base to an extent, like the deployment methodology. We haven't done any acquisitions which have bolted on to make that more complicated. Mm-hmm. So we're making the most of that situation. We've done a fair bit of work over the last quarter or so to put in all the checks and the controls around that deployment. And the next thing is to really put in place the processes to ensure that our team understands how to to deal with different situations and the like. So that's something we're going to tackle in the next quarter. And I'm excited to go through that and do a bit of a sprint with Nick, my co-founder and co-CEO, to really see how much we can get done in a period of time and really focus on that. I think that the benefit will be that we have a much more understood and clear way of running a business, which is obvious to our customers as well, which is a very good thing. I'm all in favor of it. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, I think we're seeing some of the similar things, but we did acquire a bunch of stuff, and so that is making everything a bit more difficult for sure.
I can understand it would be very tricky to try and bridge those gaps and to homogenize enough to be able to have a really clear statement going forward. So yeah, okay. So we touched quickly on the Atlassian apps that they're bringing. Are there any apps in the marketplace that you have got an eye on that you'd love to go and talk to? Of course, Easy Agile side.
I mean, of course. Yeah. So, I mean, we a big need that I'm noticing now in the market, I don't know if it's like a secret or something. I should wait because I know Team 23, they're going to be doing some stuff and I'm really excited for them. So one of the things that we're noticing is, so backups, so enterprise support, basically. Right now, when you're on the cloud, you know, most companies, again, in the 40,000 and plus, have strong backup needs and they actually have requirements, laws, things that they need to abide by, as far as how long they maintain data, how long they have backups of data and all that. Right now, the way that it's done in cloud isn't nice at all. You actually have to go into the UI, you get a backup. If your backup is large, it's going to take multiple days to process and you got to remember to do, it's all manual. There's nothing that really automated. So there is a growing kind of market for these kinds of apps. And I've been talking a lot to these people at Revyz, R-E-V-Y-Z. And what they do is they basically automate that process for you and they host your data. Right now, they only do it for a year, but it's still much better than what we're seeing out there. And there's a lot of need for services like that where they, because I mean, part of the appeal of cloud is obviously hands off, don't have to worry about things anymore. And Atlassian only guarantees backups for 21 days. So if you're an enterprise and you're looking for 6 months at least of data recovery, at least you're not going to get that. So by having a partner like Revyz or all these, there are other apps out there. I'm talking about Revyz specifically because I talked to them a bunch, but a lot of interesting things are happening. And also what's amazing about these apps, what these developers have found that once they've have that process, they now get access to the structure of the data and they've started building tools around that structure. So for instance, that app can actually restore projects and issues and custom fields and configurations. And you don't need to do a full restore. You can actually pick what you want to restore, which is brilliant. And it's something that even in data center wasn't easy to do. You couldn't just say like, hey, give me that issue. You'd have to restore the snapshot, go into the system, find your stuff. Like now being able to go into my UI in Jira, go into my backup app, go and look the issue that I deleted by mistake, find it, restore it the same day. It has like comments saying this was restored by Revyz, so make sure blah 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 yada yada yada. It's just brilliant, and I'm really excited to see kind of that grow this year.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's a really intriguing part of this piece that I've never really thought through. That's actually a really important part of running an enterprise, that you need to have those continuous backups. Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
that's a great insight.
It's gonna be an interesting market to dive into because we've been asked. Even as a service partner, like, can you deliver on this? And the truth is, without an app, you can't. There's no real way for me to get a backup. Like, I'd have to go into your instance every day. I don't think you want a consultant going into every day your instance, like downloading a backup and throwing it. Like, I'd rather spend my money elsewhere. So these apps are going to be, very, very, I think they're going to be big. And I'm really interested to see what happens with all these different ventures.
That's certainly a booth I'll be popping by to see if we can include the Easy Agile data in that backup as well.
Yes, exactly. So they are looking at other app partners and seeing what they can do. So I think, absolutely. If you want to have a chat, they're great people.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today, JP. That's a wrap. Hey, is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we wrap up? Is there anything you're hoping to get away from the event, to take away from the event? Anything on the sidelines you're going to see when you're there?
I mean, obviously App Day is going to be a big thing. I'm really excited to, meet y'all in person, see everybody. So App Day is like is the time where I get really technical, get my hands dirty. I don't do that a lot these days. I miss it sometimes, just sitting down and doing some good old admin work. So these days are usually, like the App Days are usually when I really get back to the nitty gritty of let's talk about Scriptrunner, where we're at now, and let's meet with, you know, with Easy Agile, with Temple, with all these different app vendors, and talk about what's coming up and what they're seeing. So really looking forward to that. But other than that, no, just looking to have a good time. You know, I'll hopefully get some good social time as well at the evening. Like I said, we won't kid ourselves. Half the fun is also after the events every day. So really looking forward to that for sure. And meeting all my fellow ecosystem partners and talking to everybody and seeing what they've seen in the past year.
Likewise, I'm at least 1,000% more excited now having talked to you about it. So thank you so much for taking the time today, JP, to talk through that. And I can't wait to see you there.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you. Thanks for having me.
No props. Thanks, mate.